everyone that the royals were mistreating their ward. I explained to both of them that I got the job because I was used to working and wanted money of my own. I don't know if they understood it, but eventually they accepted it. Maybe Steve will come around too. For some reason, I'm not too hopeful about that. Lacking anything better to do, I wander down the hall to find the owners of all the cars outside. In a computer lab, a bunch of students are clustered around one screen. Toward the end of the hall, I hear the clashing of metal against metal. A peek inside the window reveals two students waving swords at each other, advancing, retreating, and slashing at one another. I watch the sword play for a few minutes before moving on. On the other side of the hall, a large number of students are silently engaged in a different kind of battle. This one is comprised of boards and chess pieces. In almost every hallway, I see huge posters for the winter formal, as well as sign-up sheets for what seems like a million different clubs and organizations. Seeing all this makes me realize that I don't know much about Astor Park. I assumed that it was like any other school, with its football in the fall and baseball in the spring, only stocked with wealthier kids. I hadn't paid much attention to extracurricular events or activities or groups, because I didn't have time for that. Now it looks like I have nothing but time. My text alert goes off. Callum's response flashes on the screen. "He's your father. Sorry, Ella." Seriously? 2 days ago, Callum was making a grand speech about how he feels like my father. Now he's backing down? What changed between then and now? And what gives Steve the right to do this? Can parents really prevent their kids from working? My mom didn't care what I was doing, so long as I could assure her I was safe. Furiously, I key in a response. "He has no right." Callum replies with, "Fight the important battles." It's good advice, I guess, but it causes an ache to develop in my chest. If Mom were alive, I wouldn't have to deal with Steve on my own. But if she were alive, would I even know Reed? Easton? The twins? No, I probably wouldn't. Life is so unfair sometimes. I pull up in front of the main gym. The double doors are propped open and hip-hop music blares in the background. I spot Jordan inside, wearing booty shorts and a bralette. Her back is to me as she curves one arm elegantly over her head, and then she spins around on one foot, using her other leg to whip herself into a pirouette. I rub one foot against the other. Mom and I used to dance around the house. She told me she wished she could have been a professional dancer. In some ways, she was. Like a dancer, she moved her body and got paid for it. The only difference was, no one in the audience wanted to see a pirouette, or appreciated the graceful arch of a limb. Plus, she had to take all her clothes off. I don't have any real classical training, not the kind that I suspect Jordan has. The few classes Mom was able to pay for were more of a tap and jazz mix. Ballet was too expensive because you were required to buy specific shoes and leotards. After seeing my mom's despondent face when she checked out the prices of gear, I told her I thought ballet was stupid, even though I was dying to try it. The other dance classes only required me to show up in socks or bare feet, and I was happy with that, but I won't deny that I sometimes stood outside the door of the ballet room, watching the girls dance by in their pastel leotards and toe shoes. I can't help superimposing those images over the one I'm watching now, until Jordan spins to a stop, with her eyes shooting fire at me. Too bad I can't pin the murder on Jordan. "What the hell do you want?" she snaps. Her hands are on her hips, and she looks ready to come over and kick my ass. Fortunately, I already know I can hold my own with her. We threw down, literally, just a few weeks into classes. "Just wondering who you ate for breakfast?" I answer sweetly. "Freshmen, of course." She smirks at me. "Don't you know? I like them young and tender and weak. Of course you do. Anyone strong would scare the shit out of you. Which is why Jordan doesn't like me. You know what would scare the shit out of me? Climbing into bed with a murderer. Tossing her long dark hair over one shoulder, she walks over to her gym bag and pulls out a water bottle. Or are you so jaded from all the guys you've slept with that normal ones don't turn you on anymore? You wanted him before, I remind her. He's rich and hot and supposedly has a good dick. Why wouldn't I want him? Jordan shrugs. But, unlike you, I actually have standards. And, unlike the royals, my family is actually respected around these parts. My father has won awards for his philanthropy. My mother heads up half a dozen charity committees. I roll my eyes. What does that have to do with you wanting Reed? She scowls. I just told you. I don't want him anymore. He's bad for my image. A laugh pops out. You're saying all this as if you and Reed hooking up is actually a possibility, which it isn't. He's not interested in you, Jordan. Never has been. Never will be. Sorry to burst your delusional bubble. Her cheeks flush. You're the delusional one. You're screwing a killer, sweetie. Maybe you should be careful. If you make him angry, you might be the next person in the coffin.
Is there a problem?
Mr. Barringer, the headmaster of Astor Park, appears out of nowhere. Even though he's all bluster, I've seen Callum pay this guy off more than once. I still don't want to make any waves. Not at all, I lie. I was just admiring Jordan's form. He eyes me suspiciously. The last time he saw us together, I'd taped Jordan's mouth shut and paraded her, bloody nose and all, in front of the school.
I see. Well, perhaps you can do that another time, he says in a clipped voice. Your father is here. You're being excused for the day.
What? I blurt out. But I have classes. Your father? Jordan echoes in disbelief. Isn't he supposed to be dead? Crap, I forgot she was here. It's none of your business. Jordan stares at Barringer, then at me, and then collapses on the gym floor, laughing so hard she needs to wrap her arms around her stomach. Oh, God, this is amazing, she gasps between giggles. I can't wait to see the next episode where you're pregnant, but we don't know if it's Reed's or Easton's baby. I scowl at her. Every time I start thinking of you as a human being, you have to ruin it by opening your mouth. The headmaster directs a glare at my nemesis.
Ms. Carrington, this behavior is completely uncalled for.
Barringer's reprimand only makes her laugh harder. Visibly clenching his teeth, he takes my arm and guides me away from the doorway.
Come along, Ms. Royal.
I don't correct him about my last name, but I wrench my elbow out of his grip. I'm serious. I have classes. He bestows a smarmy smile on me, the kind he probably gives to old ladies when he asks them for a donation to the Astor Park Endowment. It says that he's doing me a favor.
That's all been taken care of. I've informed your teachers that you've been excused, and you won't even need to make up your coursework.
Yep. He thinks he's doing me a favor. What kind of bullshit school are you running if you can just excuse a junior from classes and not have her do the makeup work? His already thin lips flatten in a disapproving line.
Ms. Royal, just because your father has returned from the dead doesn't mean you can mouth off to me like that.
Give me 1,000 demerits, then, I mock. Or maybe I'm pleading. I'll serve them today. He simply smirks.
I don't think I will. It sounds like you're already serving a punishment.
Seriously, I hate everyone in this school. They're the worst. I wonder what Barringer would do to me if I just refused to walk out the front doors. Would the police show up and drag me away? The headmaster stops at his office and tips his head down the hall toward the lobby.
Your father is waiting.
He gives a slight shake of his head.
I don't understand why you aren't excited to spend time with him. You're a strange girl, Ms. Royal.
With that, he disappears into his office as if he doesn't want to spend one more moment with the weird kid who doesn't want to see her father. I rest my head against one of the lockers and force myself to face the truth I've been dodging ever since Steve showed up. I don't want to spend time with him, because I'm scared. What if he doesn't like me? I mean, he left my mom. Whatever she had wasn't enough to keep him, and Maggie Harper was an angel. Beautiful, sweet, and kind. And then there's me. Prickly and difficult to get along with, not to mention foul-mouthed and set in my ways at the ripe old age of 17. I'm bound to say something that embarrasses me and offends him. But no matter how badly I want to hide in these poison-infested halls, Steve is waiting, and I've got two choices. Stay and meet him, or run and lose Reed. And if those are my only choices, there's really no decision to make. I point my feet toward the lobby and start walking. Chapter 13. Ella. When I walk up, Steve is waiting in the lobby with his hands in his pockets, reading the bulletin board notices.
"This place hasn't changed much," he tells me as I approach.
My forehead creases in confusion.
"You went here? You didn't know?"
"No, I didn't think Astor Park was that old." A wry smile lifts the corners of his mouth.
"Are you calling me old?"
My cheeks heat up.
"No, I just meant..." "I'm only teasing. I think the first class graduated in the 30s, so yeah, this place is old."
He takes his hands out of his pockets before facing me full on.
"You ready to go?"
My spine stiffens. "Why?"
"Why what?"
Steve looks confused. "Why are you taking me out of classes?"
"Because you can't hide behind Behringer like you do Callum and his boys."
I can't hide the surprise that leaps across my face. And Steve is perceptive enough to notice. He smiles.
"Thought I didn't notice you were avoiding me?"
"I don't know you."
And I'm scared. Too many things are out of my control. I'm used to being in charge.
For as long as I can remember, Mom relied on me to pay the bills, shop for groceries, get myself to school.
"That's why I'm taking you out for the day. Let's go."
This time, his smile is laced with steel. "That's me," I realize with a jolt. My mom was soft. My dad? Not so much, I guess. I follow him outside because I sense there's no getting out of this. At the curb sits a low-slung sports car full of curves. I've never seen anything like it. Except for the color. It's the exact shade as my own car. A patented color called royal blue, according to Callum. The wonder must show in my face because Steve says,
"Bugatti Chiron."
"I have no idea what you just said," I say matter-of-factly. "It sounds like a brand of spaghetti." With a chuckle, he holds the door open for me.
"It's a German car." He runs his hand along the top of the roof. "Best in the world."
He could be making all this up and I wouldn't know. I'm not a car person. I like the independence of having wheels, but even I can tell that this car is something special. The leather is softer than a baby's bottom, and the dials are shiny chrome.
"Is this a spaceship or a car?" I ask,
when Steve settles into the driver's seat.
"Maybe both. It goes from 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds and has a max speed of 261 miles per hour.
He flashes a boyish smile in my direction.
"Are you the rare female who's also a car enthusiast?"
I'm offended for my gender. I bet there are lots of female car fans out there. I buckle my seatbelt and offer a reluctant grin in return. I'm not one of them, though.
"Too bad. I could let you drive it."
"No, thanks. I actually don't like to drive all that much." Steve mock glares at me.
"Are you sure you're my daughter?"
"Not really." Out loud, I say, "DNA says I am." That it does, he murmurs. An awkward silence hangs between us. I hate this. I just want to go back inside and attend my classes and make out with Reed during lunch period. Hell, I'd rather exchange insults with Jordan right now than sit here with Steve. My father.
So, what should we do today?
He finally asks. I toy with the strap of my seatbelt. You don't have something planned? Then why did you pull me out of school, I want to shout.
I thought I would leave it up to you. Lady's choice.
This lady chooses to go back to class. But I have to remind myself that continuing to avoid Steve isn't going to make this awkwardness go away. Might as well face it head on. How about the pier? I suggest, naming the first place that pops into my head. It's November, so it'll be too cold to sit outside, but maybe we could go for a quick walk or something. I'm pretty sure I brought some gloves.
That's a very good idea.
He starts the engine, and the entire car vibrates from the power of it. As Steve drives through the massive front gates of the school, my gaze strays to the right, in the direction of the French twist. Just like that, my body tenses again, the memory of what he'd done returning in full, angry force. Why did you get me fired from my job? I blurt out. He glances over in surprise.
You're upset about that?
Yeah, I am. I cross my arms. I loved that job. Steve blinks a couple of times as if he can't understand what I'm saying. I'm wondering if I should try saying it in a different language when he finally snaps out of his trance.
Shit, I mean, shoot. I thought Callum was forcing you to work.
Steve shakes his head in dismay.
Sometimes he does strange things to enforce responsibility in his kids.
I haven't seen any of that, I answer tightly, feeling oddly defensive of Callum.
Oh, he used to threaten the boys with military school all the time.
My annoyance rises up again. Working at a bakery is nothing like military school.
Your shifts start at 5 a.m, Ella. You're what, 16? Surely you'd rather be sleeping in.
I'm 17 and used to working, I retort, then force myself to soften my tone. My mother always said you caught more bees with honey than vinegar. But you didn't know that, so I get why you made assumptions. My voice goes even softer. But now that you know I love my job, can you go back and tell Lucy that it's okay for me to work?
I don't think so. His hand waves dismissively. My daughter doesn't need to work. I'll take care of you.
Steve hits the accelerator, and the car zooms forward. I resist the urge to cling to the dashboard, fear for my life overshadowing the irritation that his comment evokes.
Now, tell me about yourself, he says as he drives down the road like a maniac.
I bite my lip in frustration. I don't like the way he just ended the bakery conversation.
You're not working, the end. His parenting skills need work. Even Callum, who's not winning any father awards, was willing to have a lengthy discussion about me working.
You're a junior, right? What did you do before coming here? Steve is completely oblivious to my unhappiness. His blue eyes are fixed on the windshield, his hand skillfully shifting gears as he weaves through traffic. Feeling unusually petty, I respond in a saccharine tone. Didn't Callum tell you? I was stripping. He nearly drives off the road. Crap. Maybe I should have kept my mouth shut. I proceed to hang on for dear life as he swerves back into the correct lane.
No, Steve sputters. He forgot to mention that.
Well, I was. I stare at him in challenge, waiting for him to lecture me. He doesn't.
I can't say I'm thrilled to hear it, but sometimes you've got to do whatever it takes to survive.
Steve pauses. You were on your own before Callum found you. I nod.
And now you live in the shrine of Maria. I'm surprised Brooke didn't have that portrait taken down.
There's a giant painting of Maria that hangs over the fireplace, and when Callum and Brooke announced their engagement, Brooke sat under it with a smug smile. The boys were so mad about the engagement, the way it was announced, even about Brooke's ring, which was a match for the one Maria wore in the portrait. The whole setup was like a human-sized middle finger. "She didn't have the time," I mutter.
"I suppose not. I imagine the first thing she'd do is redecorate the place from top to bottom. Everything in that house has Maria's fingerprints all over it."
He shakes his head.
"Those boys all idolize her. Callum, too. But no living person is a saint."
He tilts his head slightly, sliding a glance in my direction.
"It's not good to place a woman on a pedestal. No offense, sweetheart."
Is that resentment in Steve's voice? I really can't tell. "None taken," I mumble. If Steve had intended to make the conversation between us even more awkward, he picked the perfect topic.
"So this car is really fast," I say, in a desperate attempt to distract him from the Maria train of thought.
A faint smile touches the corners of his mouth.
"I hear you. No more questions about Maria. What about your mother? What was she like?"
"Kind, loving."
"What do you remember about her?" I want to ask.
But before I can, he's already moving on.
"How are you enjoying school? Grades okay?"
This man has a serious case of ADHD. He can't stay on one topic for more than 2 seconds.
"School's fine, I guess. My grades are fine."
"Good. That's good to hear."
He throws me another curveball.
"You're dating Reed?"
My mouth snaps open in shock.
Yeah,
I finally admit.
"Is he treating you well?"
"Yes."
"Do you like seafood?"
I fight the urge to rub my confused eyes. I don't understand this man. All I know is that he drives too fast and has spitfire conversations that make my head spin. I can't make sense of him. At all. That was the worst. Hours later, I stomp into Reed's bedroom and throw myself onto his bed. Reed sits up and leans against the headboard.
"Aw, come on, it couldn't have been that bad."
"Didn't you hear me?" I grumble. "It was the worst."
"What was the worst?"
Easton asks from the doorway, then barrels into the room.
"Dude, you need to learn how to knock,"
Reed tells his brother in exasperation.
"What if we were naked?"
"Naked implies you're having sex, and we all know you're not." I stifle a sigh. I should probably be used to the frank way Easton discusses Reed's and my sex life, but I'm not.
"You weren't in Kim,"
Easton informs me, as if I wasn't aware of my own absence.
"You and Val skip?"
"No." I grit my teeth. "Steve pulled me out of school for some father-daughter bonding."
"Ah, gotcha."
Easton flops down on the bed next to me.
"Didn't go well, huh?"
"Nope," I say glumly. "I don't get him." Easton shrugs.
"What's there to get?"
"Him." I run a hand through my hair in frustration. "He's like a man-child. We had breakfast at the pier, then took a drive up the coast and had lunch at this restaurant on top of a cliff. I swear, all he did was talk about cars and how much he loves flying planes. Then he told me all the times he almost died on his crazy adventure trips, and how he wishes he was still a Navy SEAL because he loved blowing shit up." Reed and Easton snicker. They'd stop laughing pretty darn fast if they heard the comments Steve had made about Maria. But I don't want to poison that well, so I concentrate on the other weird stuff, and there was plenty. He changes subjects so fast it's impossible to keep up, I say helplessly, and I can never tell what he's thinking. My teeth sink into the inside of my cheek as I look at Reed. He knows we're together. My boyfriend nods.
"Yeah, I figured. We weren't exactly trying to hide it."
"I know, but..." I swallow. I got the feeling he doesn't like it. And that's not even the worst part.
"Am I the only one who thinks this sounds like a badass day?"
Easton pipes up.
"I want to eat on a cliff." He wants me to move in with him and Dinah.
That shuts Easton up. Both he and Reed go stiffer than the bedposts.
Not happening, Easton says.
According to Steve, it is. I moan unhappily and climb into Reed's lap. His strong arms instantly wrap around my waist, anchoring me. He didn't push the issue about me staying at the hotel with them, but he said that the second the police release the penthouse, he expects me to move in. He asked me if I had any design ideas for his interior decorator. He's hiring someone to decorate my room.
Reed tucks a strand of hair behind my ear.
Dad won't let that happen, baby.
Your dad doesn't have a say in it. My throat tightens to the point of pain. Steve is the one who gets to decide, and he wants me to live with him.
Easton makes a growly sound.
It doesn't matter what Steve wants, you belong with us.
He's right. I do. Unfortunately, Steve doesn't agree. At lunch, he even asked me to consider legally changing my last name from Harper to O'Halloran. If I was going to change it to anything, it would be Royal, but I didn't say that to him. I simply nodded and smiled and let him babble and babble for hours. I honestly think he just likes hearing the sound of his own voice.
Stop stressing,
Reed advises, running one hand over my lower back. I can't. I don't want to live with him and that bitch. I won't.
It won't even come down to that,
he promises.
The thing about Steve, he's all talk and no action.
Easton nods fervently.
It's true. You totally nailed it when you called him a man-child. Uncle Steve is a big kid.
Easton's right. Steve has all these big ideas, but he never follows through on any of them,
Reed admits.
He gets distracted.
Yeah, by his dick,
Easton says, and I cringe at that.
He could be in the middle of a board meeting, and you put a hot chick in front of him, and he's out of there.
Yeah, my father sounds awesome. Not. Please don't talk about my dad's penis in front of me. That's disgusting.
He's just caught up in this whole I'm a father thing, Easton says with another shrug. Once that wears off, he'll probably forget you exist.
I know he's trying to reassure me, but he only succeeds in bumming me out even more. Every new thing I learn about Steve brings a new knot of anxiety to my stomach. And now I'm scared again. But not at the idea that Steve might not like me. I'm afraid I won't like him.
Chapter 14. Ella.
Since Val doesn't have a car, and I don't have a job anymore, there's nothing stopping me from driving her home after school on Friday. I was hoping we'd catch up during the drive, but she's surprisingly quiet. So at the next red light, I glance over and come right out with it. You're mad at me, aren't you? Her gaze flies to mine.
What? No, of course not.
Are you sure? I say anxiously. Because I've been a really crappy friend this week, I know I have.
No, you've been a busy friend.
She smiles sadly.
I totally get it, Ella. I'd be distracted too if my boyfriend was being accused of murder.
I really am sorry I haven't been around. Life sucks.
Tell me about it.
We trade grim smiles.
What's going on with you and Wade?
I ask as I drive through the intersection.
Nothing. Her tone is vague.
Nothing? Seriously? They've both been super cranky every day this week, barely even looking at each other at lunch.
That's not nothing.
I turn onto Val Street and slow down in front of the Carrington mansion. Before she can escape, I click the lock so she can't open her door. Val snickers.
You realize this is a convertible, right? I can just climb out.
Well, you're not going to. I give her a stern look.
Not until you tell me what's up.
Nothing's up. She sounds exasperated.
Wade is... Wade, we're not together.
But do you want to be? I press. She heaves a huge, exaggerated sigh.
No, I don't. I narrow my eyes.
Really?
Yes. No. Maybe. I don't know, okay?
I sigh, too.
Are you pissed at him because he hooked up with someone else?
Yes, she bursts out. Which is stupid. It's not like we were even going out in the first place. We just fooled around a couple of times in the bathroom, but I was having fun again, you know? I wasn't obsessing over Tam anymore.
Sympathy tugs at me. Val took her breakup with Tam, her old boyfriend, pretty hard. I was so happy to see her finally getting over it.
And then Wade asks me to hang out one weekend, Val goes on. And I was busy, so he was like, okay, rain check. So I get to school on Monday and find out he made out with Samantha Kent on Sunday at the golf club. That is so not cool.
Her expression clouds over. It reminded me of Tam screwing around on me, and she trails off. I reach out and gently squeeze her arm.
I get it. You got burned and you're not looking to get burned again. You were too good for Tam, and you're too good for Wade.
I hesitate.
But for what it's worth, Wade seems to feel really bad about everything.
I don't care. I told him before we hooked up that I wanted it to be exclusive. If he's with me, even if it's just casual, then he's just with me.
She stubbornly sticks out her chin.
He broke the rules.
So I take it you're not coming to the game tonight?
Nope. I'm staying home and waxing my legs.
I laugh.
Wanna come over? She asks. We can make it a spa night.
I can't, I say glumly. Unlike you, I don't have a choice about going to the game.
Callum told us last night that the whole family is going, no exceptions. It's a show of force.
Val's lips twitch.
I didn't realize we were at war.
We might as well be.
I shove a strand of hair out of my eyes.
You've heard all the whispers at school. People are saying the most terrible stuff about Reed, and apparently some of the Atlantic Aviation board members are giving Callum grief about it, too.
Are there reporters camped out in front of the mansion?
Shockingly, no. Callum must have thrown his weight around or something, because any other case like this would cause a huge media storm.
I slump down into the seat.
Reed's lawyer wants us to act like Reed did nothing wrong. We're supposed to stand together as a family and all that.
Only I'm not supposed to stand too close.
Reed didn't tell me that, but Callum took me aside the other day and suggested that we cool it on any PDA.
She rolls her eyes. And going to a football game will convince people that Reed is innocent?
Who knows?
I shrug. Plus, Callum thinks it's a good time for Steve to come out to the other families. He's hoping maybe it will cause enough of a stir and take the heat off Reed.
Val's dark eyes probe my face.
How's that going, anyway, you and Steve?
A groan slips out.
Not great. He keeps trying to spend time with me.
She mock gasps.
How dare he?
I can't stop a giggle.
Okay, I know that sounds crazy.
But it's weird, okay? He's a total stranger.
Yeah, and he's gonna stay that way, as long as you keep avoiding him.
She wrinkles her nose.
Don't you want to get to know him? I mean, he's your dad.
I know.
I chew on my bottom lip. I tried to be open-minded when he showed up at school on Monday and insisted we spend the day together, but all he did was talk about himself.
For hours, it was like he didn't even notice I was there.
He was probably nervous, she suggests. I bet this is hard for him, too. He comes back from the dead and finds out he has a kid. Anyone would have a hard time with that.
I guess.
I unlock the doors.
Anyway, you may leave now, m'lady. I need to head home and get ready for the game, I say in a tired voice.
Val snickers. Careful, girl. Your enthusiasm is so contagious, I might do cartwheels all the way to my front door.
She pulls on the door handle and hops out of the car,
then taps the door frame and grins at me.
Good luck tonight.
Thanks, I answer. I have a feeling I'm going to need it. There is an ocean of space around us.
An ocean. All week, I've seen kids at school whispering about Reed, but I didn't think those whispers would extend to Callum. Callum Royal has always seemed untouchable to me, confident and in control, a captain of industry who everyone sucks up to. The last time he came to a game, there was a ton of sucking up. Every other second, a parent stopped him to chat about something. Tonight, Callum is getting the silent treatment. We all are. Me, Steve, and the twins. We're sitting in the stands in the row right above the home team bench, and everyone around us is sneaking peeks in our direction. I can feel their accusatory gazes boring into the back of my head. And as uncomfortable as it is for me, it's a million times worse for Reed. He can't play tonight because he still has stitches in his side from the stabbing orchestrated by Daniel Delacorte. He's benched for another week, but he's still expected to stand on the sidelines. I wish he could sit up in the stands with us. I hate how alone he looks right now, and I hate that people keep whispering and pointing at him. "That's the Royal boy," some woman hisses loud enough for all of us to hear. "I can't believe they let him come here tonight." "It's shameful," another parent agrees. "I don't want him around my Bradley."
"Someone needs to talk to Behringer about this,"
a male voice ominously chimes in. I wince. So does Callum. Beside me, Steve seems totally unconcerned by all the negative attention. As usual, he's talking my ear off, this time about some European trip he's planning for us. I don't know if "us" means me and him, or if that includes Dinah, too. Either way, I'm not interested in going on a trip with him, even if he is my father. He still makes me so nervous. The funny thing is, I can totally see why my mom was drawn to him. In the week he's been back, he's been filling out. His face is no longer gaunt, and his clothes are actually starting to fit his lean, muscular frame. Steve O'Halloran is decent-looking, for a dad, and his blue eyes always hold this boyish twinkle. Mom had a thing for the playful types, and Steve definitely fits that bill. But as his daughter, and not someone who's romantically interested in him, I think the boyish act is kind of annoying. He's a grown-up. Why doesn't he act like one?
"You're sulking," Sawyer murmurs in my ear.
I snap out of my thoughts and turn to the younger Royal. "No, I'm not," I lie, before looking past his shoulder. "Where's Lauren?" Technically, Lauren is Sawyer's girlfriend, so she's usually his date for these types of things.
"Grounded,"
he answers with a sigh. "Aw, why?"
"She got caught sneaking out to meet me and..."
He stops when he notices Steve listening in.
"Me," he finishes. "Just me."
I hide a grin. I don't get Lauren Donovan at all, but I think it's kind of ballsy that she's so open to dating two boys. I can barely handle one. Speaking of my one, Reed looks miserable on the sidelines. His gaze is glued to the touchdown zone, or the end zone, I can't remember what it's called. No matter how many times Reed and Easton try to teach me how the game works, I still don't like or care about football. I can tell Reed is upset that he's not out there with his teammates. The defense is on the field. I know this only because one of the blue and gold jerseys down there reads Royal. Easton is lined up in front of an opponent. I see his mouth moving behind his face mask, which tells me he's making some smart-ass comment. Yep, he totally is. When the play starts, the opposing player lunges at Easton like he wants to murder him. But East is dangerous out there. He sweeps by his opponent, who falls to his knees, while two other Astor Park players tackle Marin High's quarterback before he can throw the ball.
"That was a sack," Sebastian says helpfully, leaning over his brother to explain the play to me.
"I don't care," I reply. On my other side, Steve chuckles.
"Not a fan of football, I gather."
"Nope."
"We've been working on her," Callum says from the other end of the row. "But no luck yet." "It's all right, Ella," Steve tells me, The O'Hallorans are a basketball family anyway.
Just like that, I tense up again. Why does he keep saying stuff like that? I'm not an O'Halloran, and I hate basketball more than I hate football. I muster up a smile and say, Harpers are anti-sports. All sports. Steve's mouth curves in a tiny smirk.
I don't know about that. If I recall correctly, your mother was very, sporty.
My mouth slams shut. Was that some sort of disgusting innuendo? I'm not sure, but I think it was, and I really don't like it.
He's not allowed to talk about my mom that way. He didn't even know her. Not outside of the biblical sense, anyway.
On the field, the Astor Park offense is lining up. Wade is our quarterback, and he's shouting unintelligible words to his teammates. I think I hear him yell, Stud Muffin! At one point, which prompts me to poke Sawyer in the side.
Did he just say Stud Muffin?
Sawyer snickers.
Yeah. Peyton Manning has Omaha. Wade has Stud Muffin.
He might as well be speaking gibberish. I don't know what a Peyton Manning is, and I don't bother to ask. Instead, I watch as Wade throws a perfect spiral on the first play, which lands right in the capable hands of some Astor kid running fast down the sidelines. My phone buzzes in my purse. I pull it out and find a text from Val.
Ah, he's not allowed to play this good.
Instantly, my head swivels to search the crowd, but my best friend is nowhere to be seen.
Where are you? I text back.
Concessions. No food at home, so I drove here to buy a hot dog. I snort out loud. The twins glance over, but I wave off their curious stares and send another message to Val.
You are so busted. You came to see Wade.
No, I was hungry. For Wade. I hate you. Just admit you like him. Never. Fine. Then at least come up and sit with us. I miss your face.
A loud cheer rocks the stands. I look down to catch the tail end of the play. Another perfect pass from Wade. I'm not surprised when Val texts back immediately.
Nah, going home. Stupid idea to come here tonight.
Sympathy floods my system. Poor Val. I know this thing with Wade started as a rebound for her. Or maybe as a way to pass the time before she was ready to seriously date again after her breakup. But I'm positive she's developed real feelings for the guy. And I think Wade likes her, too. They're just too stubborn to admit it.
Like you and Reed? An inner voice taunts.
Okay, fine. Reed and I were the same way in the beginning. He was such a jerk to me, and I spent weeks fighting my feelings for him. But we're together now, and it's awesome, and I want Val to experience that same awesomeness.
Who are you texting?
I instinctively slap my hand over the screen when I realize that Steve is peering at my phone.
Why the hell is he trying to read my texts?
A friend, I answer tersely.
His narrowed gaze focuses on the home bench, as if he's expecting to see Reed typing into his cell phone. But Reed has his hands on his knees and is intensely watching the game. I don't like the suspicion in Steve's eyes. He already knows I'm with Reed, and even if he doesn't like it, he has absolutely no say in who I date.
Well, why don't you put the phone away? He suggests, and there's a bite to his tone. You're out with your family. Whoever you're talking to can wait.
I shove the phone back in my purse. Not because he ordered me to, but because I might have hurled it in his face otherwise. Callum never cared if I texted my friends during a football game. If anything, he was happy that I had friends in the first place. Beside me, Steve nods in approval and refocuses his attention on the game. I try to do the same, but I'm all riled up again. I want to catch Reed's eye and mouth to him how much I dislike Steve, but I know Reed will just tell me to ignore him, that Steve will get bored of this father stuff eventually.
Except, I'm starting to think that's not going to happen.
Chapter 15. Reed. After the game, Dad and Steve insist on taking us out for a late dinner at some French place in the city. I don't want to go, but I'm not exactly given a choice. Dad wants us to be seen in public. He says we can't hide, that we need to act like nothing's wrong. But everything is wrong. All those stares at the game tonight. Shit, my back and my ears are still burning from all the condemning eyes and scornful whispers that pierced me. At dinner, I sit in stony silence and wish I were at home, preferably with my lips on Ella's and my hands all over her body. Beside me, East stuffs his face like he hasn't eaten in weeks, but I guess he's earned the right to pig out. Astor Park kicked Marin High's ass tonight. We finished the fourth quarter 4 TDs ahead, and everyone was in high spirits afterward. Well, except for me. And maybe Wade, who, for the first time since I've known him, didn't announce that he would be celebrating the win with a BJ followed by lots and lots of sex. He was in a crappy mood as he stripped out of his gear and stomped out of the locker room. I think he said he was going home, which, again, isn't very Wade-like. On the other side, Ella is also stone-faced. I think Steve said something to rub her the wrong way at the game, but I'm not going to ask her about it until we're alone. Steve's been on some weird power trip ever since he came back from the dead. He keeps talking about how he has a daughter now, so he has to set a better example. Dad, of course, nods in approval every time Steve says shit like that. In Callum Royal's eyes, Steve O'Halloran can do no wrong. It's been that way for as long as I can remember. When we get back from dinner, Dad and Steve hurry off to the study, where they're probably going to chain drink scotch and drone on about their SEAL days. East and the twins disappear into the game room, which leaves just Ella and me. Finally. Upstairs? I growl, and I know she doesn't miss the predatory gleam in my eyes. Riding the bench tonight sucked ass. Forget the fact that everyone in the stands was talking about me, and that some asshole coughed the word killer into his palm when he passed me. Not playing was 1,000 times worse. I felt like a useless sack of potatoes, not to mention more than a little jealous as I watched my friends pummel the other team. All the aggression I didn't get to expend tonight is rearing up now. Luckily, Ella doesn't seem to mind. She flashes me that beautiful smile and tugs me toward the staircase. We practically sprint to her bedroom. I lock the door, then lift her up in my arms and march over to the bed. She squeaks in delight as I fling her onto the mattress. Clothes, I order, licking my lips. What about them? She toys with the bottom of her loose green sweater, all innocence. Off, I growl. She smiles again, and I swear my heart soars to the sky. I don't think I could have survived this week if I didn't have Ella by my side. The murmurs at school, the phone calls from my lawyer, the police investigation that's still going strong. As much as I hated Brooke, it's not like I'm jumping for joy that she's dead. I'm not going to miss her, that's for sure. But nobody deserves to die like that.
Reed?
Ella's humor fades when she sees my face.
What's wrong?
I swallow.
Nothing.
I was just thinking about stuff I shouldn't be thinking about.
Like what?
Nothing, I say again, and try to distract her by peeling my long-sleeve shirt over my head. It works. The moment she lays eyes on my bare chest, she makes a breathy little sound that goes right to my dick. I love that she loves my body. I don't care if that makes me some cocky, superficial jerk. The way her eyes darken with pleasure and her tongue comes out to lick her bottom lip is the biggest ego boost a guy could ever get.
Your stitches,
she says, as she's done all week when we fooled around. Healing nicely, I answer, as I've done all week when we fooled around. Now take off your clothes before I do it for you. She looks intrigued, as if she's wondering whether to be difficult just so I'll follow through on the threat, but I guess she's as horny as I am, because her clothes start coming off in the next moment. My entire mouth turns to dust when her pink bra and matching underwear are revealed. Ella has no idea how gorgeous she is. Every girl at Astor Park would die to have those curves, that golden hair, the flawless features. She's pure and total perfection, and she's all fucking mine. Keeping my pants on, I climb onto the bed and press my body against her, my mouth finding hers again. We make out forever, kissing and groping and rolling around on the bed until finally I can't take it anymore. Her underwear comes off, my pants are undone, her hand is on me and my hand is between her legs, and it's so good I can't think straight.
Lie back,
she murmurs. Holy hell, she's bent over me now, and her mouth is doing things that drive me absolutely crazy. Her hair falls over my thighs. I thread my fingers through the soft strands, guiding her over me.
Faster,
I whisper.
Like this?
Yeah, like that. Her lips and tongue shove me right over the edge, and even though it's probably the biggest cliche in the book, once my body settles, I pull her up and tell her I love her.
How much?
She gives me a teasing smile. So much, I say hoarsely. Like an insane amount.
Good.
She plants a kiss on my lips.
I love you an insane amount, too.
She lies down beside me, stroking my abs while her lower body slowly rolls against my hip. Damned if that doesn't get me going again. I might have gotten off, but she hasn't yet. I love being the one to get her there. She makes the hottest noises when she comes apart. My turn. I rasp as I move down her body. She's so ready for me, it's not even funny. I get hard again because the thought of being the first one to slide into her welcoming body is hot enough to melt the entire continent of Antarctica. But I can't. Not tonight. Not until I know for sure that I'm not going to be locked up for a crime I didn't commit. But I can do this instead. Torture her with my mouth and my fingers and make her moan and plead. Ella! A sharp voice commands from behind the door. Open up! She shoves my head away and bolts up as if the bed is on fire.
Oh my God, it's Steve!
She hisses out. I sit up, shooting a wary look at the closed door. I locked it, right? Please fucking say I locked. The doorknob jiggles, but the door doesn't budge. I breathe a sigh of relief. Ella! Steve barks again. Open the door now!
1 second!
She calls, her tone hasty and her eyes wild with panic. We hurriedly throw our clothes on, but I don't think we do a good job of looking put together, because when she lets Steve in, his gaze turns into a thundercloud. What the hell are you two doing in here? I arch a brow at the rage in his voice and the redness of his cheeks. I get that he's Ella's father, but it's not like the two of us were filming a porno in here or something. We were just messing around.
We were watching TV,
Ella mumbles. Both Steve and I turn toward the black screen across the room. Steve clenches his fist to his sides before turning back to Ella. Your door was locked, he practically growls.
I'm 17, she says stiffly. I'm not allowed to have any privacy?
Not this much privacy, Steve shakes his head. Is Callum out of his mind? Why don't you ask him yourself? Comes my father's dry voice. Steve spins around to the doorway where Dad stands with his arms crossed. What's going on here? Dad asks calmly. Your son just had his hands all over my daughter. Steve snaps back. My mouth, actually. But I keep quiet. The vein in Steve's forehead already looks like it's about to burst. No sense in speeding the process along. This is unacceptable to me. He continues, his tone colder than ice. I don't care what kind of parenting role you've decided to take. Your boys can screw to their heart's content, but my daughter is not one of Reed's sex toys. My shoulders snap straight. Who the hell is he to say that? Ella is my girlfriend, I say coolly. Not a sex toy. He jabs a finger at the messed up bedspread. So it's perfectly okay for you to take advantage of her like this? His icy glare shifts to Dad. And you? What kind of father allows two teenagers this much freedom? Next thing you're going to tell me they sleep in the same room. Ella's guilty expression doesn't go unnoticed by anyone. When Steve sees it, his face turns redder. He takes a deep breath, slowly relaxes his fists, and then says, Pack your bags, Ella. There's a beat of silence, followed by three incredulous exclamations.
What?
Ella.
No way.
Me. Steve, that isn't necessary. Dad. Ella's father only addresses the last remark. Actually, I think it's very necessary. Ella is my daughter. I don't want her living in this kind of environment. You're saying my home isn't a good environment for a child? Dad's tone sharpens. I've raised 5 sons here, and they're all doing fine. A loud laugh booms out of Steve's throat. They're doing fine? One of your boys is charged with murder, Callum. Sorry to be the one to break it to you, but Reed's not a good kid. Outrage slams into me. The hell I'm not. He's a bad influence, Steve goes on as if I hadn't spoken. They all are. He looks at Ella again. Pack your bags. I mean it. She juts her chin.
No.
She's only just settled into a routine here, Dad says in another attempt to calm Steve down. Don't rip her away from the place she considers home. Her home is with me. Steve retorts. You're not her father.
I am, and I don't want my daughter shacking up with your son. I don't give a shit if that makes me old-fashioned or unreasonable or whatever the hell you want to call it. She's coming with me. You want to fight me on this? Fine, I'll see you in family court. But right now, you can't stop me from taking her out of this house. Ella's panicked gaze darts over to Dad, but the look in his eyes says it all. Defeat. She turns her imploring gaze to Steve.
I want to stay here.
He's unmoved by her plea. Sorry, but that's not an option. So, I repeat, pack your bags. When she doesn't budge from my side, he claps his hands together as if she's a trained seal. Now! Ella fists her hands at her side, waiting for my dad to jump in. When he remains silent, she stomps out angrily. I'm about to go after her when Steve stops me. Reed, a minute of your time, he says tersely. It's not a question, it's a command. The two men exchange glances. Dad's face tightens and then he backs out of the room, leaving me alone with Steve. What? I say bitterly. You gonna tell me again what a bad influence I am? He walks over to the bed and stares at the rumpled covers before shifting his gaze to me. I fight the urge to fidget. Nothing Ella and I were doing in here was wrong. I was once your age. Uh-huh. To him. I think I know where this is going. I know how I treated girls, and in retrospect, I regret that a bit. Steve runs his hand along the edge of the bed frame. Ella's right. I haven't been involved in much of her life, but I'm here now. She's had a troubled childhood, and those types of girls often look for affection in the wrong places. And I'm one of those wrong places? I tuck my hands into my pockets and lean against the dresser. It's sort of ironic that one of the most straight-laced girls I know with the shittiest upbringing has an absentee father giving me a lecture on doing right by his daughter. During the entire 9 months or so that I dated Abby, her dad's entire conversations with me were about the Astor Park football team. Reed, Steve softens his tone. I love you like you're my own son, but you have to admit that you're in a challenging situation here. Ella's obviously very attached to this family, but I hope you won't take advantage of her loneliness. I'm not taking advantage of Ella in any way, sir. But you are sleeping with her, Steve accuses. If he expected me to be embarrassed or ashamed, he's pegged me all wrong. Loving Ella is one of the best things I've done in my short life. I'm making her happy, I answer simply. I have no intention of talking about our sex life. Ella would be mortified. Steve's lips press together in a tight line. He's not pleased with that response. You're a physical guy, Reed. You like to fight because you enjoy the impact of your fist against someone else's flesh. You enjoy the clash of strength against strength. By the same token, you probably can't go without sleeping around. I'm not judging you because, hell, I'm the same way. I'm not a big believer in fidelity. If a girl's available, who am I to say no? Am I right? He grins, inviting me to be part of that trashy lifestyle. I've said no plenty of times, I tell him. Steve snorts in disbelief. All right, let's just go with that. When it comes to Ella, though, if you really love her, then you're not trying to paw her clothes off every second. I see how you look at her, kid, and it's with a belly full of lust and not much more. He closes the distance between us and places a heavy hand on my shoulder. It's not wrong. I'm not expecting you to change. I'm just saying that Ella's not the girl to screw around with. Treat her like you'd want your own sister to be treated. She's not my sister. I bite out. And I do treat her with respect. You have a murder charge hanging over your head. You might go to prison for a very long time. How's Ella going to cope when you're there? Do you expect her to wait around for you? I speak through clenched teeth. I didn't do it. Steve doesn't answer. Does this man, who's been part of my life for as long as I have memories, actually believe I'm capable of killing someone? Embittered, I study Steve's expression. Do you really believe I did? After a beat, he squeezes my shoulder, hard. No, of course not. But I'm thinking about Ella. I'm trying to put her first. Those vivid blue eyes, the ones that Ella has, stare at me and challenge. Can you honestly say you're doing the same?
Chapter 16. Ella. You know, the reason why there's no floor 13 is because a large number of patrons are secretly superstitious.
Hollow Oaks is rumored to be built over an old Confederate cemetery. There might be ghosts here.
Like the ghost of your dead body, I think sourly.
Steve waves the key card in front of a sensor and punches the P button. He's all smiles now, as if